All right, folks, welcome back to the latest belated Mountain West Wire football podcast. Matt, this might be a theme we've been doing the past couple weeks, a not a Sunday show. So if you're waiting, clamoring, pardon our dust.
Well, you're being a road warrior. That's a perfectly valid excuse.
If you listen to our last show, I don't even know who was last team we did. I should look at my chart, but Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, and since then, I think I've been to Dallas, Texas, Bryan, Texas, and now in Houston, Texas. I've been going everywhere. So, yeah, it's you gotta fit where you can do it, man. I'm doing it late at night during a nasty lightning storm outside here. Hope my plane's not delayed on the next morning. So, but yeah, this is not the weather podcast or travel podcast. MWR.com football podcast today, and as voted by y'all out there on Twitterverse, Twitterverse is stupid. Why did I say that, man? I don't know, but. It's Boise State this week. Last year, our buddies Raj, Paul, and Eric like, don't vote. Do it at the end. Save the best for last. Well, that didn't work last year because they weren't the best last year. So just right. Maybe they want to be earlier on in the rotation.
Something like that.
So what we did always do last year, they made the championship game. COVID year, so it's like, did it really happen? Some fans would like to say no, but we'll say it did happen. They lost in the title game to San Jose State. Wasn't all that close, really, if you think about it. But you'll hear us repeat this all the time. The weird thing about last year was that, especially more so Boise State, as we said throughout last year, was, remember, Matt, it was like they weren't just out because of COVID. They had all the you need an X number of linemen or X number of offensive linemen or DBs or linebackers. There's a couple position groups. Mm-hmm. They had games canceled not because of people being sick or contact tracing, but actually being injured plus that.
Yeah, and so when you look back at the season that was, and you see that, like, okay, they managed to go 5-2, they managed to, you know, lead the conference in points per game and things like that, and they were generally the same kind of above average Boise team that we've come to expect year in and year out. But you know, as with pretty much every team in the Mountain West, there was a little bit of an element of weirdness in addition to. You know, maybe some of the things that you know, like, I think you mentioned the injuries in particular, you know, the types of things that teams will deal with no matter what. And so it's just kind of one of those things where, like, yeah, they weren't 5-2, they went to the championship game, but there was, you sort of felt like there was still something like a little bit lacking, like, you know, in terms of, like, you know, net points per drive, for instance. They were just outside of the top 50. There were a number of teams in the Mountain West that were ahead of them. Like Fresno State was ahead of them. San Diego State, we talked about a couple weeks ago, was ahead of them. You know, Nevada, San Jose State. And so, you know, you look at where they ended up, you look at where they're projected to be in 2021. And I mean, this is still a top 40 team by like SP Plus, but with all of the transitions that this team is going through right now, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, kind of new old defensive coordinator, and losing a handful of really key pieces on both sides of the ball. Yeah, like it's a fair bet that they're going to be a very good team again. But the question, as always, maybe more so than in many years past, is, well, what is their ceiling this time around? Because I think I think it's sort of an open question relative to a lot of other years.
Can I backtrack to something you said about the season last year?
Yeah.
So, you know, you said it was a lot of weirdness. That's not the correct term. They were ducking teams last year. Don't forget.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just be sure to forward all commentary to @JeremyMoss on Twitter.com.
Of course. But San Jose State, yes, but totally that Vegas game versus the Rebels. Come on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I had to bring that up because it's so ridiculous and stupid, people. No, they I just don't think that's the funniest thing. I'm like, but that makes me laugh. You're going to go to, like, I need to pause. I need to pause. I waited to pause. I'm like, I got to say, take you back 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the season itself, it was, you're correct, because specifically the lacking part, but you look at the score, like, you just look at how they won. Every game was like a lot of blowouts. Like, they should have blown out Hawaii, they won by 8 points. They came back in the second half. They crushed Air Force, they were scoring 40 plus points a game. The Wyoming game is weird, 17-9. They lose to San Jose State, which is not unexpected, it's how good they were. The only real it's a weird thing to describe. The BYU game was just a butt kicking, and that was just how good Boise BYU was last year. CSU game was weird because they scored what 21 points on special teams. So, and a Hawaii game in the second half, they nearly blew the lead. And so, like the record was fine, which was well above average. They played the championship game, but what do you think? Like you say, it's kind of lacking. Like, what do you mean by that? Because what were they missing?
It may, I mean, in a, in a, in short, it was like if it wasn't one thing, it was another. Whether it was injuries, whether, because like you mentioned the BYU blowout, and they were down to like their what, fifth string QB in
Yeah,
that
that's
game.
tough.
And if it wasn't that, then they were missing George Halani. And if it wasn't that, then they were missing a number of defensive linemen. And if it wasn't that, then there was like, and it wasn't to say that they weren't, like the stars that were left standing throughout the year didn't produce, but there were some elements that you were accustomed to seeing that, for reasons, maybe some of them within their control and some of them outside of it, were just sort of lacking from time to time.
I can see that. It was just, it's just to feel like George Halani didn't really play, because that's all I said. I remember last year specifically, hey, if George Halani plays, they probably can beat San Jose State. He doesn't play. He leads the team in rushing that game with 26 yards, Andrew Van Buren. They lose the game. So there's a couple weird things, but new head coach, clearly Andy Avalos taking over for this season. So, because Brian Harsin, if you've been under a bus out in Auburn now, taking that job because he could choose to upgrade to a bigger conference, but Boise State cannot. So,
War Eagle, et cetera, et cetera.
Aggies almost beat Cam Newton, so that's my or the defending champ. So there's that too.
There you go.
But that's a better way to put it. But they're playing this. Well, I don't know. I'm getting that. But they this year, new head coach Avalos comes to Oregon, where he was a DC before Boise State. Like he said, the old DC guy in charge. When he's at Oregon, they went to. I got two Rose Bowls with him as assistant coach.
Did they?
They
I
beat
don't I don't remember
Utah.
I don't remember off the top of my head. I just remember there
They
was
beat.
the blowout a couple of years ago at the Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, there's that. They beat. Remember, they beat University of Utah. Utah would have won. They would have been in the playoff in 2019. They technically won the champ. Remember this past year, which whatever they're ranked 25th or something, they win and they can't play the title game or they get the back doorway in. But again, last year doesn't count. But Andy Avalos, like your defense is usually pretty good. And the Pac-12 is kind of tough because there's a lot of offenses out there. But this hire, we've talked about it a million times before in other shows and written stuff. It's the best move they can make because every move Boise State's made, who's been a former assistant in the past handful of years, has been really good. So I don't expect it to. The only difference this time is the defensive guy, it's the offensive guy, or other way around, sorry, offensive defense. So I don't expect much of a drop off, but there are a lot of questions we'll get to. Head coach, not a concern. It is his first time head coaching, but do you have any concerns with him taking over as it pertaining to getting ready for this year?
Nothing that seems really pressing. I mean, obviously there's some of the position unit questions that they'll have to address, going into fall
Obviously.
camp, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But I think, what's more important is who we brought in as the offensive coordinator, who we haven't mentioned yet, and that's Tim Plow from Montana State, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I'll double check. It sounds right. All
It's
right,
not
Northern
Montana, I
Montanas.
believe it's Montana State. But he brings in sort of a different look offense than what we've been accustomed to seeing in the Harsin years, where it's he was steeped more in like more spread, more options in the passing game. And when you look back at last year, kind of going back to what I was saying a few minutes ago about, things that were sort of lacking, if you just look at the raw numbers and see that Boise State averaged 33 points a game, Athlon had a really interesting stat that I think is sort of telling, which was that six of the touchdowns that they scored last year, six out of 31 were actually scored by either special teams or defense. And that was number one in the country. And so, like, if you're talking about removing like one offensive score a game, now all of a sudden you're not looking at an offense that led the pack. You're looking at an offense that's a lot closer to the middle. And maybe more case in point, Boise State last year on a per play basis had their worst overall performance in their Mountain West tenure. They only averaged 5.42 points per or yards per play. and that ranked seventh overall in the Mountain West, if you're looking to get a little bit of context. Like for the sake of context, New Mexico and Wyoming both outgained Boise State on a per play basis, which is not the kind of thing that you would expect to talk about when you talk about a Broncos offense. And so, you know, I think, you know, Plow's hire, what he's able to do, you know, not only with the components that are coming back, because obviously he's starting with maybe a better base of talent than anybody else in the conference, but, you know, how they address some of last, if you look at what they were able to accomplish as far as yards per play, you know, they were seventh overall in the Mountain West. You know, their 5.42 yards per play was actually the worst such figure since they joined the Mountain West.
Yikes.
And it wasn't particularly close. And even if you look at like other, you know, metrics by like, you know, available yards per drive, this was a below average offense last year. And so I think, you know, you start looking at those kinds of things and you realize like on a per play basis, both Wyoming and New Mexico outgained the Broncos. And that's not the kind of thing that you would typically associate with the Broncos offense. And that's why I think that, you know, Plow as the offensive coordinator, what he decides to do to kind of, you know, marry the personnel that he's inheriting, which, you know, as always, you know, Boise State is starting with a much better base than just about anybody else in the conference. But, you know, what he does to bring out the best in the personnel that he's got to work with is going to go a long way towards determining how far this team can go.
Also, really quick, Tim Plow, UC Davis.
Oh, what's it, UC Davis?
It's Dan Hawkins.
It's the summer.
Yeah, it's,
that's my excuse.
It's our preseason, man, right?
Yeah.
We're still figuring a couple
things out. I'm rounding my way into form, too. I apologize.
Yeah, it happens. Happens to me more than you, but we're all good. But what we're getting at is all the stuff this past year, like all the changes and things. And that's why you mentioned that what his offense can do, it's going to be quite different. And part of the reason the offense sputtered was Jack Sears came in, Hank Buckmeyer, they rotated due to injury, contact tracing. Andrew Van Buren played a lot more than George Filani. So the offense was never its full strength, which makes perfect sense for those numbers you rattled off about how their production was kind of a step behind or one of the worst since joining the league. So that's if that gets shored up, and we'll get to QBs in a minute, but that's still a jumbled mess we don't know about. But I kind of said before, if they have like even last year and even probably randomly in the offseason, if you had a constant running game with George Filani, they're going to be okay. And the quarterback play, it's going to be good. It's what we've seen from both guys. It'd be good. It just depends who's going to do it, I think. And if they split, which I'm not a fan of, but it's going to be fine regardless who it is. I think it's just the ground game's the most important thing. They lose like guys like a couple receivers off the NFL, but it's their ground game that's going to lead the team this year, I think.
So if it were you making the choice as to who was going to be QB1, would it be Buckmeyer or would it be Sears?
Hank Buckmeyer.
Because I'm with you.
What's the question? I don't understand. That's a dumb. No, I get your point, but I'm like, that's a dumb question, but I don't get why that is a question or why that's a thing. Unless it's a manufacturer fake QB competition, which I would put good money on.
I mean, I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, if you look at it objectively, Boise State's got a better 1-2 combination than, you know, any other team in the conference, which is a really good starting point.
Wyoming would like a word with you, please.
No. This is not a conversation.
I said a word. They're two QBs. Come on.
Yeah, I'm just saying. But like, I think on the aggregate, Buckmeyer and Sears put together have more upside, more talent than the Wyoming duo of Chambers and Levi Williams, which we'll talk about at some point there in the summer. But I think, you know, to kind of emphasize the point, if you look at what Buckmeyer did on a game-to-game basis, yeah, he missed a couple of their most important games, you know, at Air Force, home versus BYU. Mm-hmm. But he was pretty good overall otherwise. And maybe you want to adjust a little bit for, like, opponents or whatever. And you do, I think, fairly have to ding him a little bit for underperforming in the title game against San Jose State. But, you know, you're still talking about a guy who was, you know, basically had a 6-2 touchdown to interception ratio, still completed over 60% of his passes, still averaged about 7.5 yards per attempt. While he wasn't necessarily on the same level as other quarterbacks in the conference last year, I think it's still, the upside is still very apparent, I guess is what I'm saying overall with Buckmeyer. Oh, yeah. And that's why I'm with you, where like, I mean, I could see where it makes sense to make sure that both guys are prepared, especially since, you know, Bachmeier has had a history where I think Bill Connolly was the one who pointed out that he's missed 8 of 21 games over the last two seasons, which is not insignificant.
Well, also a couple of last year weren't his fault, I would say.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, some of it was injury related, some of it wasn't necessarily. It was more contact tracing related, things like that. But while the upside is still there, obviously, I think it makes sense that they would want Sears to be prepared to step in, because when his number was called upon, in that Air Force game in particular, he stepped up and he responded. He was able to operate that offense. And I think that that is more of what you're looking for as a Broncos fan if you're looking ahead to 2021, is you're looking for Bachmeier to stay healthy, first and foremost, I would say. You know, you're looking for him to be, you know, efficient through the air, you know, generating more explosive plays through the air. And then if, knock on wood, he does get banged up and has to miss a game or two, that Sears can step right in and the offense won't necessarily miss a beat.
There's also something to be said, new head coach, I want my guy in there.
Yeah.
So I bet that with all of that has a bunch to do with it. Tim Plow, like, who can run my offense? And I like to run at FCS level. So I get why. Well, if you put your coaching hat on or think of that prospect or think of that direction, it makes 100% sense. Like, it's also, we don't want to give away stupid secrets that are really stupid secrets because it's college football and dumb sport we like. But it's also preparing to keep your guys, like you said, ready to play. But also, it's new coach wanting this guy. But also, it's like, well, let's just not let everything out of the bag. But I just think people can argue this on Twitter, they do all the time, even our DMs with our buddies. It's like, I don't see this as being a close case. Because you're right. Like, remember, Hink Buckmore started game one at Florida State and beat the Seminoles, right? Like, Florida State hasn't been amazing, but still a good program, pretty good program. We got good athletes, good talent. They came from behind to beat them. It's like, that's a pretty big deal. And so it's like, well, maybe this guy USC will want to be a quarterback because he went to USC. It's like, no, have a stupid spring battle or fall battle now, I guess, for a week. You're going to name a well, two CF open, but typically these guys want to have their. Here's what I say: coaches will know their starter 10 days out, so they have a week plus to prepare. I would bet basically anything that's going to be Hink Bachmeier starting, taking the first snap.
Yeah, I would think so.
UCF. I don't. Do you have a can you make a counter argument to why you want would Jack Sears be QB1?
Pedigree. I think if
From
you were
what?
gonna, well, because he's a what, former 4 or 5 star recruit from USC.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think it's readily apparent that, like, you know, in even when it comes to game action, like, he's got the tools to lead the offense. And so, like I said, I can understand why they would want to make it a competition. I just think, like, if I were a head coach, I would want to make a definitive statement that, like, you know, we have a guy who has started the majority of the last 2 years. This is our guy until further notice.
And Hink Buckmeyer, also a 4-star quarterback. So,
Yeah. So
not
there
to
you
you, but
go.
in general, just in general, not to you. That fart sound.
No, I get what
So
you're saying.
mature. No, but you know, but again, my point is like he's also a 4-star guy. Here's my prediction: what will happen? It's going to be stupid Montel Cozart again, where they're going to try to
I don't think
rotate. Because
so.
you don't think so? Not at
No,
all.
because Cozart was more of a change-up for Brett
Yeah.
Rypien than Sears would be for Bachmeier. They're both, I think, generally tend towards being more pocket-based, you know, willing to stay in the pocket, take a hit, and try to make a big play, than, you know, Cozart, who was a little more mobile, and you know, I don't think you're necessarily going to see, you know, Sears kind of, you know, rolling out and making a lot of plays that they don't necessarily need him to.
They shouldn't.
I think they
I
just
just
want him to.
have
I think they just want him to, like, find the open man and make the right throw.
I just have a gut feeling. But also, if you're Indianapolis, why do you want to be sneaky and weird and tricky about two QBs when he didn't they'd never really done it Oregon except for a touch last year, kind of when they had the young guy over there trying to take over when Justin Herbert was gone, NFL figuring their guy out. But like I said, like I'd bet nearly anything. Bring it to me. I don't care on Twitter. Say throw me something at me. I'll do it. It's going to be Bachmeier. There's no reason. Nothing's convinced me that Jack Sears is good. Well, I'm not going to say that he's good enough, but that he should be the starter. Nothing.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so running back. And also, let me ask you this too. I'm looking at like Athlon magazine, just because that's what I've out there. Or not Athlon, what is it? Athlon, they're a preseason all Mountain West. There's a reason Hank Bachmar is. If they felt it was a truly competition, he wouldn't be on one of the all conference teams, right? Like they have Carson Strong, obviously, Nick Starkle, Jake Haner, there's other quarterbacks that could be in the mix, like Shavon Cordero could be in the mix, mm-hmm. as good as Bachmar for stat numbers. You could look at, might be the only other one, depending whoever Air Force is, but it's a completely different beast for quarterback. But I could see him being almost not middle of the pack, but I don't think the QB situation Boise is going to lend himself to be winning player of the year or second team, but there is clearly Bachmar is in the top half by far, maybe top third. Yeah. But I think he's still a step behind the Starkle, Strong, and Jake Haner, and I don't think it's that close.
Mm-hmm. No, I would definitely agree with that.
All right, so what do we got for running back? We already mentioned with George Lonnie, just give him the ball, right?
I think getting him back is definitely going to be a boost for the entire unit because, you know, he only started like, what, one or two games last year before he was knocked out?
Very few, but I think the most important position on this offense.
Yeah, and in his stead, Andrew Van Buren, who, you know, I believe he's back. I know he's listed on the 2021 spring roster. But, you know, he had a couple of moments, but it was pretty clear he wasn't as explosive as Halani was. Like, you know, he led the team in rushing 382 yards.
Whatever.
Under 3.5 yards per carry, though.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I'm looking at. No.
And the guys behind him on the depth chart who saw a little bit of run, you know, like Danny Smith only had 12 carries. He basically averaged about 3 yards carry, too. Like, it got to the point where they were trying to find any excuse to get the ball into Khalil Shakir's hands. And I think, you know, Halani coming back with a clean slate of health is going to do a lot to resolve those problems because, you know, if they don't necessarily have to be as one-dimensional or as plodding on the ground as they were last year, it's going to open up opportunities for everybody else on the offense. That doesn't even account, too, that they also brought in a transfer from Oregon, Cyrus Abebe-Lakia. And so maybe you're looking at a situation where they don't necessarily need Halani to be a bell cow. Like they can set up one of those guys to be maybe a closer of some kind or, you know, a short yardage back or, you know, a trio of options is a lot better, I think, than putting, you know, all the majority or nearly all of your eggs in one basket. Because I think once Halani went down, you know, yeah, Van Buren scored 8 touchdowns, but they had a really hard time, I think, on the whole, replacing that level of production he gave them a couple of years ago.
And we'll see with Paul's offense, like he wants to have tempo and be aggressive out there. Mm-hmm. So that could be the depth in there where you still want to be efficient, but are they going to give that up for big plays? Like that's it's Solani or bust almost for them. Oregon transfer, Van Buren depth is good. But even if they tone the carries down a touch, he's still going to have 75% of the carries. Like if he gets 18, Your next guy should have maybe 10 at most, right? 8, 10, 6, 5 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
That's what it should be because he's a proven guy. He doesn't need 20. He's not going to be McNichols back there or Doug Martin or whoever to get 30-something carries a game or like even, what's his name with the Vikings now?
Alexander Mattison.
Yeah, sorry, once the Dalvin Cook is back up. Alexander Mattison, who fourth quarter beast come over and crush you over because he didn't play a ton. He gets 20 carries in the period. That's not the guys they have, but the production can eventually maybe be that. So we'll see how it goes. But
I would guess they probably want a Helwani to have somewhere between like 17 and 20 touches a game because in 2019 as a freshman, he was averaging somewhere between 13 and 14. And then he was also averaging a couple of receptions per game as well. And I think that, you know, that is another element of that offense that they really missed last year because Van Buren wasn't the same kind of pass catcher as Helwani was either. But like I said, I think that doesn't necessarily have to happen, though, in order for the offense to be successful, especially if Van Buren can be like a guy who just pushes the pile, moves the chains every so often in short yardage situations, power success rate, things like that. Or, you know, if Habibi Lakio can be that same kind of guy to just like step in and, you know, for a handful of plays at a time to keep Helwani fresh, maybe for like red zone opportunities or something like that.
That's sort of like this running game should be like top four in the conference. Like production wise, probably behind Air Force, behind Fresno, behind Wyoming, probably San Diego State, depending on Greg Pell's health, but probably behind them. If they're top four or five, that's good enough. Like there's a lot of combinations. Like when we go through this, Boise's probably gonna be pretty good, projected to probably win the Mountain Division because I don't think it's that tough. But which means you don't have to be amazing in all these different statistical categories. Like I don't think they'll be the best rushing team, but it'll be close and they'll be probably that second tier. Like I don't think they're not very close to Fresno State in my opinion. They're not close to Wyoming. Air Force will just do what they want to do. If San Diego State's healthy, Greg Bell. Nevada's fine with Tua Tagovailoa, but they're kind of in that range, I think, like middle, upper pack.
And I think the other thing that'll help, too, is the fact that, you know, I think other than Nick Crabtree, every guy who saw substantial playing time on the offensive line last year is also returning. And you're talking about a couple of guys who have, like, all-conference potential in them. John Ojukwu at left tackle, Jake Stets at right guard. You know, and Stets in particular is maybe one of those underappreciated guys we should be talking more about as far as like, you know, some of the better offensive linemen in the conference. And I think even among, you know, even replacing Crabtree, they have Uzo Tsuji, who was a transfer from Rice, I believe, last year. He started the last couple of games of the year. So it's not like he's coming in cold into a starting job. And behind them, you know, you've got other guys who've seen some playing time as well, like Dante Harrington could be a rotation guy. Dallas Holliday could be a rotation guy.
Upperclassmen guys, yeah.
And that doesn't account for the fact that, you know, yeah, the running game and the running backs in particular had their struggles, but I think the offensive line was okay given the circumstances. You know, I mentioned power success rate a minute ago, and Boise State was actually 8th in the country on offense in that regard, 86% essentially. And they were right around the national average as far as sack rate allowed as well, which I think considering the quarterback shuffle that they had to go through last year is a net win for them. And so you're all of a sudden you're looking at an offensive line that's one of the more experienced in the conference. And I think that, you know, that is another kind of indicator that to me it bodes very well for their ability to trend upward or rebound from where they were last year.
Yeah. The experience 4 starters is back, but that's why it's great to have George Helwani back because Van Buren behind a pretty good offense line wasn't good. So
he was okay.
Three something average. Come on. 3.2 a carry. No. No.
I mean, I think it's also worth noting too, like, you know, the yards per carry average isn't great, but the team, you know, and this is including Helwani and Van Buren and everybody else who carried the football last year, they were in the top 40 in terms of stuff rate too last year as well. Yeah, they weren't getting a lot of explosive plays on the ground, but they also weren't getting pushed backwards, which is just as important.
Well, my point being, Van Buren should have been better because of the line, not that the dot line was holding him back. Mm. So that's more of a running back thing than offensive line thing.
Yeah,
I wasn't just break down. I'm like, well, if they're that good, well, maybe you should have gotten to at least 4.2 a carry or something realistic and just acceptable. Mm. So them being possibly better, it all comes down to like what Tim Plow runs. That's what are they, it's going to kind of, the scheme changed a bit, kind of air raid passing a bit more, which you said their sack rates was good. Their protection was well. The guys who were good, who ran the ball when they were good, were doing well. So this might be their strongest unit, because QB, the reason I wouldn't say that, because if they're still jerking around, who's going to start? That's the only thing where it's, that could be something, because not to step back there too much, but like I mentioned, oh, maybe they'll play both. Maybe they're just, if you stumble, you get in the play. It could be that situation, which is also pretty crappy. But the line's going to be the most stable position out there. And it's dumb cliche. If the line's good, everything's going to be much better around it. But that's true in what they have coming back and what's returning. If this goes well, you have Helani back there, runs the ball well. Quarterback plays pretty good. Like, everything's well above average. But the offensive line is their best, I think, their best unit overall. Mm-hmm. And can help them the most for their success.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if there's one pressing question that I have about this offense's ceiling is, what are they going to do beyond Khalil Shakir in the passing game?
Yeah, who's going to catch the freaking ball for them, Matt?
Because I put this out there. I can't remember if we brought this up on the podcast. I know I put it out there on Twitter before the title game last December. But I went through and I've looked up the number of targets that Khalil Shakir had, just because I saw he was really running away with things as far as, you know, receptions and receiving yards and touchdowns and everything like that. And I remember putting it out there that he had more than 2.5 times more targets than the next leading receiver on the team, which was CT Thomas. I don't know that they're going to be able to get away with that again. And that's no knock against Khalil Shakir, who is probably one of the best receivers anywhere in the country. Totally. You know, because, you know, 2 years running, you know, they found ways to move him around pretty much everywhere in the offense. Like, you know, 2 years ago, he was like a slot guy. And last year, he was doing pretty much everything, and defenses had a really hard time stopping him, even though they knew that the ball was going to be going to him more often than not. But to me, the big question for this offense is, okay, well, is this the year that CT Thomas finally has his coming out party? Because
if not, it's too late.
And I don't know if I'm maybe being too harsh, because, like, you know, a couple of years ago, 2019, he did have 41 catches. He had over 500 yards, 5 touchdowns. And last year, even though he only had 20 receptions, he did average over 17 yards a catch, which is not nothing. But is that enough to be like the second option that this offense is really going to need?
It's going to have to, because Tim Plow is going to go 3 to 5 deep passing the ball.
And then beyond that, like, if this is an offense that wants to figure out how to spread the ball around, like, is this the year that Octavius Evans finally takes a big step forward? Are we going to see more from some of these young, highly touted receivers like, you know, Billy Bowens or Stephen Cobbs or maybe even, you know, Caden Dudley or someone like that? You know, they've got guys, I think, who can step up and contribute. And this doesn't even get into the tight end situation where Riley Smith, I think, because he seems like, you know, even if he's not going to be a primary option, I think he did more than enough to acquit himself as a viable receiving option last year. But long story short, they need more than Shakir, and I think it's still sort of an open question as to what that's going to look like.
Well, in this offense too, because they want to throw it. Move. If it's going to be successful, you can't have a one or two receiving punch and a running back doing a couple like wheel routes or something swinging out of the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you're going to be able to get away with it week in and week out.
No, especially with what they want to run. It's going to be clunky and awkward and focusing on one guy. If you're running four receivers, but you're always throwing to, you know what I mean, to one or two guys at most.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mention some of the other underclassmen they have going, you know, coming in, I would assume, into more prominent roles. Like, you know, Latrell Caples is another guy. You know, Shea Whiting, guys like that, who are, you know, former 3-4-star guys. They're going to need at least one or two of those, you know, 6 or 7 names I just mentioned to step up and be like, I'm trying to think of a number two receiver from years past, like the Thomas Spurback or the Cedric Wilson type of guy, or the AJ Richardson, let's say.
That's probably better. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think that's the kind of production that they're going to need in order for this offense to really be able to hit its ceiling.
I do agree. The receiver group is the most concerning for the offense.
Which is not to say that it doesn't have potential, but it's definitely the part of the offense that has the most prove it to them, I guess I would say.
That no, that's 100% we're getting that. So yeah, that's the most proven thing. And if and they already have a proven guy, so it's not like there's a far ways to go to where they we need to do all these different things. They just need to do probably a couple of things here or there to be good. And it goes back to if you're switching quarterbacks, if you're sticking with Sears or Bachmeier, it goes all to that. Offensive line will protect them. Running game we know is good. It's just a unit where TBD at the moment, and they'll figure it out. And they typically, history says, yeah, they'll figure it out and be fine. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for defense?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have Andy Avalos coming over from Oregon, who had a pretty good defense. It's hard to, when you look at raw numbers, especially in the Pac-12 for what they do offensively a bit, it's a little not misleading, but it's not always, it's like the Big 12 your defensive coordinator to a smaller degree. Mm-hmm. Because there's teams like USC scores, you have different offenses. Like, look what Stanford does. Look what Utah does. They'll run the ball a lot. Arizona State wants to throw and pass the ball a lot. Years ago, when Arizona had good players under Kevin Sumlin, they'd want to score points. Mm-hmm. So, but Avalos, people know him from before Boise State. Like, he had a top 20 offense or top 25 offense in 2019. So, I might do it last year because what's the point, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes look at that. But the Oregon's defense was really, because I remember specifically the 2019 team, they, when they played Utah and University in the, not if I could speak, the title game, Oregon was the top. Everybody goes, oh, Utah's defense, it's so good, it's amazing. It's actually Oregon's defense that was really, really good and kind of stopped what Utah's doing all year when they had a really, when they had future NFL or Zach Moss running the ball for them and couldn't do much at all. So we know he has, he could step it up. He's done it at a big level because he did at Boise State, did at Oregon. Him coming back, yeah, he's out to DC, but stuff he learned in the Pac-12 is going to come back and help them. And the defense, and it's also too, it's like when you think of Boise, it's like, oh, it's always offense. Not always, man. In the past handful of years, defense has been not carrying the team, but has been the overall better unit the past five or so years, probably more often than not, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys like Curtis Weaver and Leighton Vander Esch would want a word about that.
Totally. Yeah, there's plenty of guys. Like, even a couple years ago, they were, like, top three in that yards per play. Like, they are typically the one of the it's usually Aztecs, Wyoming, and that's like, that's not it. But usually Boise State's very close to that group. Step behind, but still close. And what's going on for this year, it's always – because wasn't last year the defensive line that one of the positions that where they probably had to stop playing games just because of the injury aspect and COVID contact?
Yeah, they had a lot of injuries. You know, Dimitri Washington got hurt. Scala Gahion got hurt. Keegan Freeborn got hurt. I'm correct me if I'm wrong. I believe Sam Whitney got hurt.
Sure, I'll believe you.
And so you're talking about like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different guys that saw, you know, at least one start at some point last year. And I think all of those guys are coming back. And so, I mean, other than Pretty Whitney, much. I believe Whitney's the only one who's not coming back.
He's not. Shane Irwin's taking that spot.
Yeah. And so, you know, all of a sudden you look up front and like, yeah, they had a rash of injuries, especially on the defensive line last year. But the defense was still pretty good despite that. You know, they were top 40 as far as line yards allowed per carry. They were, you know, top 50 in power success rate, top 30 in stuff rate allowed. And in terms of, you know, defensive sack rate, they were 30th in the country. You know, the sack rate is shade under 8%. You know, so with all the shuffling, it's really a testament to, you know, Jeff Schmetting and Spencer Danielson, who's, you know, assuming full-time, you know, solo DC responsibilities at this point, that they were able to kind of keep it together and, you know, be, you know, like, I don't know, for example, the Mountain West's number one stingiest third down defense, things like that. Not to say that, you know, they don't have questions to resolve, but I think, you know, starting up front with the defensive line, all of those guys are coming back other than Whitney. And, you know, even if they do, you know, suffer, you know, a significant injury or two, I think they're in much better shape to weather that storm this time around because, you know, everybody who got kind of thrown into the mix last year, now they have playing experience. And, you know, that's, I think, more than you could have said at this time last year.
I cannot add anything else because you're correct on that. It's like, yeah, why speak in circles when we know what the real deal is? So,
yeah, I mean, I think, and to kind of throw one last point in there, I think, you know, the upside to having so much depth is, you know, I mentioned Curtis Weaver a minute ago. they don't really, I don't know if they necessarily need a Curtis Weaver type impact player to be disruptive. Because, you know, I think you go down the line, you know, Shane Irwin led the team with 6 sacks, but you could see a situation, I think, where, you know, a number of guys end up with somewhere between 3 and 7 sacks or something like that. You know, maybe Dimitri Washington is the guy who, you know, if he's able to stay healthy all year long, you know, has a breakout campaign that I think a lot of us were looking forward to last year from the edge.
Yeah, like Scale Gahan could be a guy too who could be up there as well. We had high hopes last year for him. So it's going to be a great unit. It's just one guy replacement. And we'll go to linebacker. They bring basically everybody back who's supposed to be starting. Like you mentioned, Dimitri Washington's kind of a, I don't know what they call it. They run the 3-4 kind of edge. He's hybrid kind of type deal. But you have like Ezekiel Noah, you have Riley Wimpy. Like that's all experienced upperclassmen guys. And it's typically the linebacker. Oh, I know Weaver was up front. But like Leighton Vander Esch and multiple linebackers before him are typically like the star position of this defense.
Yeah.
And like I want to lean to Wimpy to be that guy. I think he probably should be on the weak side there, but it's going to be, you know, where they're going to attack the quarterback, get the sacks. And with all the defense, like you mentioned, all the defensive line experience, it all kind of it builds up because I don't care if my defensive line gets all these TFLs or whatever. I want them to take up two guys so my linebacker can just slide through and crush you in the face. And that's, I think, how it'll open up because offensive lines aren't really going to be able to double or shouldn't want to double any defensive lineman because the linebacker comes through. But if you leave the linebacker to, oh, we'll bring a tight end or block us coverage that way, well, the defense line can still get in there and do their thing. So it's kind of like a pick your poison type thing on here. But I think what they're going to want to do and what they can typically do, I don't – like we say D-line's good. I think linebacker's even better for all these guys coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think linebacker is definitely more effective or more impactful at the top. I think the question is, you know, you're also talking about a pair of guys with at least some injury history in Wimpy and Noah. And so, like, if one of those guys gets knocked out for any duration of time, then what are you going to get from the guys behind them? You know, guys like Brock Miller or Brandon Hawkins or guys like that. You know, are you going to get like 60% of what Wimpy or Noah could provide, or are you going to get like 80 or 90%? And so I think, obviously, you don't necessarily want to, you don't want to see injuries happen, but I think if they do at that position, then, you know, it could be a potential hindrance. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, a couple of those guys are upperclassmen, like Brock Miller, a senior. You'd hope those guys have enough playing time and experience to come out and, hey, we're not the starter, but we'll do fine. And when Brayden Hawkins has to play, because they'll play. That's one thing, too. It's depth questionable, we'll see, but it's not like you're being backed up by a redshirt freshman or sophomore who's barely played.
Yeah,
these are guys out there seeing the field, so that should level off any concern people have. Like, well, what if this guy gets hurt? Like you mentioned, wouldn't be injury concerns, planned fewer games than typical, or what than the typical season. You're good, but I still want my best guys out there, right? You don't want to rely on them, but if they're in here or there, and maybe it's a game or something, or injury wise, I think they'll be just. Like, not great, but they'll be just fine to acquit themselves. And again, that comes back to if your defense line's good or your secondary is really good, it can kind of cover a couple of things. If there's an injury issue and you're playing somebody's not typically out there. Anything else that linebacker, like, that's a solid unit. Like, I don't know, like, it's just starters going to go play, right? Is that what all it is? Just throw them out there and go.
I would say so, yeah.
There's not much to get. So, DBs, this is a unit also. It's like, look at all the NFL guys they've had the past years in a linebacker, defense line, secondary. It's not like one position where it's always great. Like on offense, it's always running back. Kind of receiver, maybe a lineman, rarely quarterback. Like Brett Ripon's like the last guy I've been around for a while. I guess they're going to kill me. Kellen Moore. I was going to space on him. He's out there doing stuff with the Cowboys before he's not a coach. But the secondary – They put the five guys back there typically?
Typically, yeah.
Is there an offense defense really a 3-3-5, or they just kind of pretend it'd be a fake 3-3-5?
Would it be cliche to say it is multiple?
If you want to
multiple is whatever we want it to mean.
Multiple is like, hey, 2-4-5, there we go, right? Something like that. Because here's how the depth chart's listed: 2 corners, a boundary, and 2 safeties.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what is Markel Reed? He's a real cornerback, but the north boundary guy's like Kekala Kaniho. So it's like, is he a kind of linebacker? Is he kind of like what Trey Thompson does for San Diego State, kind of the in-between guy? I think what this does for most teams that do this, each one, I think it's just speed out there on the defense.
Yeah.
Because if you're a guy who can play linebacker or DB, guard a tight end or receiver, you're really versatile. You can blitz. And that's where, like you mentioned, the cliche, multiple stuff. But you can do the resist. You can do a lot of different things attacking the quarterback or attacking a certain part of the field. And they bring three starters back in that area. Like you have Skinner, Tyreek Jones. Can you know I already mentioned. But everybody else, like upperclassmen, outside, they have a couple upperclassmen backups. They have a couple of freshmen, which is interesting because you never know, like with a guy like Jalen Carker, Sam G. I can't read my writing here. Werner. Yeah, that's right. That's correct. I wrote something where I can't see. But the unit overall, when you watch what Boise State does, they play, and numbers can be deceiving when they play teams like Nevada, when they play teams that throw the ball a lot in the conference, like when they're playing, like Utah State tries to throw, but they weren't very good last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I kind of want to look at. Like, look at who they play this year. They get UCF, they probably throw the ball well. Oklahoma State, maybe, you know, the Utah State, not very good. Nevada, yes. BYU, probably, yes, despite having really good running games. Fresno, a ton. Wyoming wants to throw the ball. So they're going to be tested enough this year to have to want them to be, again, if they want to win them out of the division, which I think is super wide open, this unit can be just fine and not a concern because when you look at division play, nobody scares me throwing the ball in that division. Wyoming wants to, but I'm still not going to believe it until I see it.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, the other thing, too, if you're looking at who the Broncos are returning, pretty much all of, you know, the significant portion of their experience in the defensive backfield is back at safety. Yes. So I think in that regard, they are set. GL Skinner is very good. Tyreek Jones is very good. You know, Kaniho is a guy who can move around. He's basically been one of the best defensive players in the conference for like 3 years straight now.
Seven breakups last year.
So they're pretty much set on the back end. The question for me is, what are they going to do at cornerback? Because again, it's not like they don't have options, but you know, replacing both Avery Williams and Jalen Walker is going to be a tall task, especially since nobody, I believe, returning to the defensive backfield had more than three passes defended last year, other than Kaniho. And so, you know, that's where I start looking at this defense and seeing, okay, well, you know, Markell Reed seems likely to be one guy. Because I don't think he started more than one or two games last year. But, you know, he's had a lot of playing time over the last couple of years. He seems pretty much set. So then who's the other guy going to be? Is it going to be a guy like Caleb Briggers from, you know, Bowling Green who transferred in? Or is it going to be Jalen Reed who just came in from Utah State about a week ago before we recorded this? Is it going to be a young guy like Jalen Clark? So, I mean, or someone who's been around in the system but maybe hasn't seen quite as much, like Tyreek LaBeouf. It's going to be really fascinating to see that competition play out in the fall, especially against like we've mentioned, the offense. You know, they're going to test him every single day on the practice field. And so, yeah, I think whoever is going to win that job, I think, is going to be the guy who proves they can get their hands on the football. Because one thing I look at from last year is while they were number one as a unit in terms of like opponents' completion percentage, they only had three interceptions as a unit last year. Did you realize that?
No, that's quite low. And what did they play, seven games?
Yes.
No, that's I figured about five or six at least in that amount of games, almost one a game, but three is a criminally low for what they typically want to do.
So I would imagine that they want Reed to be like maybe the guy to kind of spearhead that rebound as far as, maybe generating more passes defended to create more tip drills or interception opportunities, for example. Or maybe, someone like, Kaunohi Kaniho, who is Kekoula's younger brother, maybe he steps up and steals, playing time in the cornerback rotation, or LaBeouf or Damon Cole or any of these other guys who, again, long on promise. But, if you're looking at one position on this side of the ball, it's got the prove it factor. It's definitely the cornerbacks.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense for what they're returning. So, yeah, and like we'll get their schedule, who they line up against. They'll be periodically tested. Week one for sure. UTEP, no. Yeah, that's the area I'm most concerned. I guess, is it concern or just intrigue of who's going to be there? I think it's a little bit more concerning than intrigue, a little bit.
I mean, I think it's less about, kind of sorting out the entire unit, But I think the really important thing is finding that second guy, because I think Reed is probably going to be like the lead guy. But it's, you know, yeah, from those three or four other names that I mentioned, like who's going to be the other guy on the outside? Because, you know, like you mentioned a minute ago, like nobody in the division is necessarily going to seem overly threatening at first, but it doesn't mean they're not going to try.
Oh, totally. They're going to try.
Yeah.
All right. Special teams, the forgotten unit by me half the time.
Well, I mean, they probably aren't going to score five special team touchdowns anymore, are they?
If they do, do they have the same special teams coach as last year? If they don't, that guy needs a promotion, right?
Yeah, something like that.
but yeah, because I was it Avery Williams get a couple of CSU kick returns. They have new guys, like he's not there. Probably CT Thomas returning kicks, Khalil Shakir. They have explosiveness on that area, if I can speak tonight or today. Because it's usually your best wide receiver back there. So that unit's, I think it touchdowns, probably not. It's basically when I think of special teams, and this is probably sad to say, just don't screw it up, guys, especially the return guys. Don't fumble it. Don't lose the ball. Don't wave off a kick to let it go 50 yards when you could pick it up and kneel it or stop it somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to backslide a whole lot, but I think hard for any one person to do what Williams did.
Yeah, it's not going to happen because he's so versatile, like blocking kicks, returning kicks. But it'll be fine. And the kicking game, they're going to have, I'm guessing, what is it, Joel Vasquez? Or that's punter. I don't care about punters. Sorry, Ryan Stonehouse and others. Punters are awesome. Apologies.
Well, Joel Vasquez was a little better last year. Sure, still probably the biggest question mark anywhere on the special teams unit. But he did average over 40 yards a kick, which is better than you could have said from his last two from the previous two seasons.
Yeah.
And then as far as the kicking game is concerned, like, you know, Jonah Dalmas came in, you know, 7 of 8 on field goals, which is, you know, a pretty good showing for a freshman.
Yeah. So it'll be fine. It'll be a good unit. I don't like to go too deep in there because it's good. It's cool. They're good. Good. You can't pass last year. So what's the point, right?
Yeah.
Now we're getting to the good stuff. Schedule, right?
Let's do it.
They open up at UCF Knights. Is it officially called the Stupid Bounce House? I thought that was a nickname.
Yeah, I don't care what it's called. It's stupid.
No, I'm looking at FBS schedules. And they usually have like Albertson Stadiums, Maverick Stadium.
Lavelle yes, Edwards I believe Stadium. It is officially called the Bounce House. It was like Bright House Stadium or something like that. And then
is that a brand Bounce House? I'm not interested to see. I know what Bounce Houses are.
I don't even know.
I'm just wondering. I don't know. It's just nothing. Bright House Network Stadium, which is a mouthful to say.
Yeah.
They play UCF. The early odds have them down by 10 points, which I think our buddy in our DM said it was like the last last double digit underdog was at Washington State where they nearly won in overtime. Mm-hmm. Where, again, Montel Cozart, whatever his name is, the shovel pass for touchdown, nightmares all the time for some reason. I always remember that. But UCF is predicted probably what finished behind Cincinnati in their division. Do you have any understanding why they're a 10-point favorite? UCF is?
That offense is loaded.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, because everybody knows Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback.
Yeah,
he's part of him. And they are losing their top running back, but they did bring in, I believe, a pair of transfers. You know, Isaiah Bowser is coming in from Northwestern. You know, Mark Anthony Richards, came in from Auburn. You know, they have Bentavious Thompson, who, you know, had almost 400 yards and 5 touchdowns last year in limited playing time. So it's not like, you know, the production that they're missing from graduations and stuff like that is going to be impossible to replace. And then, oh, by the way, they're also bringing back a guy of their own in Jalen Robinson, who was almost a 1,000-yard receiver in the abbreviated season himself. So you're talking about on that side of the ball, like maybe on paper, the most explosive offense anywhere in the country.
Well, so, and like, their offensive line is 100% back too.
That too. Yeah. And so I think, you know, the question for this game is, okay, we know what the offense is going to look like, but UCF's defense betrayed them a lot last year. You know, they gave up 50 yeah. points to Memphis. They gave up 34 to Tulsa.
Yeah.
You know, they gave up 36 to Cincinnati. They gave up 49 in the bowl game loss to BYU.
46 to USF.
Yeah.
28 to a piss poor East Carolina team.
And that was despite the fact I think they were number one. They were number one in the American in turnover margin, and they were number five nationally, yes. plus 12. So despite That's, all of that, they still lost four games. And oh, by the way, now this year they're going to be without Richie Grant, three-time All-Conference first-team performer. You know, they've brought in transfers on that side of the ball as well, so it's not like they don't have the talent. But, you know, you're looking at that set, you're looking at that defense and thinking, okay, are they going to be able to make a stop or two? Like, are they going to contain Khalil Shakir? Is anybody going to be able to do that in this game? And if they can't, then that's going to open up, I could see this game coming down to, you know, first to 40 or something like that, where both Gabriel and Bachmeier, you know, go over 400 yards and both have at least three touchdowns or something like that.
Well, they also have new head coach and Gus.
Yeah.
Like that as well. And they brought in
new offensive coordinator.
Yeah. It would be the co-OC. Is that what they're doing there?
Yeah, G.J. Kinn is co-OCing with Tim Harris Jr.
Okay, I knew G.J. Kinn offensively. But so that's also something to think about. Malzahn's a good coach. Like, where you say he did Auburn and whatnot, he beat Alabama a couple times, I think 3 of 8 when he was there. He did well. So it's a good coach also. So as for who's, like, good prediction, because it's two new coaches, defense is decimated from UCF, offense is great, but – I can't take – I want Boise State to win. I'm going to say they're not going to lose by 10. But I just don't know if they can get it done. Because if UCF is going to pass a ton, that's the one area where we thought Boise would be at their weakest, this DBs and CBs and stuff.
Yeah, and UCF, like Boise, also recruits extremely well. So, like, even though we aren't watching them on a week-in, week-out basis – like, you sort of have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to figure it out to some extent. And if nothing else – you know, when I look at a game like this, I think, okay, what is the best unit on the field? And I think the best unit in this game is going to be UCF's offense.
Totally.
And that's why I have them winning this game.
I think Boise can win. I think it would make it first to 40. It'd be like that because UCF defense is just not very good.
Yeah.
And maybe a couple other things. All right, so they get a UTEP victory, right? That's almost an FCS game, correct?
UTEP's, they had some signs of life last year. Were you aware, for example, that they won three games?
Were they all? Well, I was going to say FCS, but they didn't play. I'm sorry.
Two of them were FCS wins. I know this. I know that's what you were asking. They beat Stephen F. Austin. They beat Abilene Christian. They also beat Louisiana Monroe, who was a lousy last year. But okay. You know, it's a program that's, you know, shown signs of life, which is more than you could have said like 2 or 3 years ago. So, like, okay. Obviously still very much a work in progress, but, you know, they've got a very good running back, Deion Hawkins, who is a local kid from El Paso. You know, he had 600 yards and 9 touchdowns last year. You know, I think the biggest question for them is getting more production from the passing game, because, you know, they do have their incumbent quarterback coming back, Gavin Hardison. But, you know, he was okay. He had 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He completed about 60% of his passes. Not too bad. And they do have pieces on the defensive side of the ball as well, like, you know, Praise Amewule. I apologize if I butchered that. You know, he had 7 sacks last year. So they've got some pieces. I still don't think it's going to be very close, though. But no, I wanted to at least have my UTEP minute, my minors minute, if you will.
Your minors minute. All right. The next big game is Oklahoma State at home, who is a Big 12 opponent, obviously. There's not gonna. It's probably an average Big 12 team, I'm guessing, because that's the typically are, right? They're typically average across the board, and maybe with Gundy there getting some decent.
They were 8-3 last year.
Yeah, but
they were not far away from being a little bit more, because no. they had a 1-score loss at TCU, and they had a 1-score loss, you know, at home against Texas in overtime. And that was despite the fact that they had a ton of injuries on both sides of the ball last year.
No, I know. It's just I'm going kind of by what they typically do. They've had some really good years. I'm kind of half kidding there. But when they do have a guy, Jalen Warren, who came from Utah State. We'll see what he can do running the ball. He'll probably be their backup. But just like stick with the offense really quick, they are bringing in a new quarterback. They are Paul, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Spencer Sanders is going to be back. I was thinking of some other team. So they bring in a main quarterback there. It's like a mismatch of what's returning. A receiver or two, an offensive lineman or two, new running back. It's kind of like, oh, I got one super experienced guy. Offensive line has three guys returning typically. But what is Oklahoma State known for, Matt? They want to move the offense, right? So Gundy is he's allegedly an offensive coach, right? That's what I've been told.
Yeah, they've actually been a little more – they've actually been just as stout on defense over the last couple of years, though. Like, if you look at the preseason SP Plus projections, for instance, you know, I think it's sort of telling that, you know, Oklahoma State overall, they're ranked 29th, right? But if you look at the split between offense and defense, on offense, they're projected 49th. On defense, they're projected 12th. And that's because they've got some playmakers. You know, they've got, you know, like, I'm trying to, the name escapes me, excuse me. You know, they've got Malcolm Rodriguez at linebacker. They've got, you know, Kobe Harvell-Peel, you know, as a defensive back. You know, they're, and obviously I think that the biggest story with them is the fact that they're replacing so many guys who went to the NFL. You know, like, you know, Tylan Wallace is gone. Chuba Hubbard is gone. Who was the offensive lineman's name that was picked in like the first or second round? Trying to remember, it was Tevin Jenkins.
You're not okay.
So it's not like it's going to be a tall order to replace those guys, but you know, this is a team that is that was pretty quietly very good. I think the question for them is you know, one, how are they going to replace Hubbard? Who, yeah, he wasn't quite as good as he was last year as he was 2 years ago. You know, how are Desmond Jackson and LD Brown, you know, both of whom averaged over 5 yards carry, how are they going to pick up the slack? And I think most importantly, how is Spencer Sanders, the quarterback, you know, is he going to be able to, you know, turn his crazy athleticism into more consistent production? Because, you know, he had over 2,000 yards in the air last year. He had 14 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. But I think, you know, if you were to ask a Cowboys fan, you would say, like, there's still potential to be you know, unearthed at that position from Sanders. And so I think that the offense is going to be really hard to stop, and I don't think you can overlook the defense either, I guess is what I'm saying overall.
Because the line right now, I think, is Oklahoma State, like, from 4 to 6, I think it was. I think with – I don't know. This might be the most competitive game on the schedule. Like, I think both teams are equal in the same category arena. I think the UCF game a touch better than Boise. Everybody else on the schedule is fine. This will be probably the most even amount of game. Right. Can the quarterback, they lose a couple receivers? Can they be more efficient? Can they pick it up who's coming in, who's returning to run the offense properly? But I do think it's going to come down to Boise's offense versus the defense in this game. Like, you might rattle off all those guys. I believe if my math is right, was 6-7 starters are back on this defense from last year, 7 of 11. Secondary style.
Yeah, it's a veteran defense. And that doesn't even include Trace Ford, who missed most of last year with injury, I believe.
Yeah. Mostly it's upperclassman guy. And the guys that aren't returning, like, are being new starters, it's typically one lineman, one linebacker, one DB. So it's not like a whole unit. So they're all balanced and returning just like cohesiveness, just one guy in there each. Having said that, I still think Boise State is going to win at home. Because Boise's offensive line is really good. I love George Filani. We know the quarterback situation is going to be fine regardless is there. The concern is, I guess, is the keeping pace, which comes back to the defense.
No, I think Oklahoma State's going to win this one.
Ooh. Are you having them start 1-2?
Yes.
Okay, what about Utah State?
Well, we talked about the Aggies already, and so if you listen to that podcast, spoiler alert, you already knew I had Boise State winning that one.
Obviously. What about Nevada? We've talked about them.
Well, we talked about Nevada, too.
I know. I'm just thinking there. What did I pick here? Oh, that's my reason. Okay. I'm looking at my schedule here. We can talk a little about it, because not every Boise State fan is going to listen to that one for Nevada, because I think that's like the biggest game. So I was doing my if you listened to me before, you heard what I said about Nevada, and we had a big kerfuffle in the chat with everybody, like our Boise guys. I'll say it again. What my reason for that? With this, okay, Nevada, if you go back and listen, but if you didn't, what do you need to know? Carson Strong, great quarterback. Romeo Dubs. Toa Chow. The offense is going to be the best in the conference. I mentioned this because schedule plays a big part in me when you're picking winners and losers. Even we're sitting here in the middle of June. The biggest thing for Nevada, go back to them, is their schedule. So I have Nevada winning this game, or losing, yeah, sorry, Nevada losing and Boise winning. But I also said, and people give me flack, I don't know if I'm playing defense here, but I still think talent-wise, overall, Nevada's much better. However, when Nevada's playing at Cal, at Kansas State, Idaho State, not Idaho State matters, but all these road games the first month of the season, that's an issue. That's difficult. And so that's my main reason why Boise is going to beat them.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. The Wolfpack, like when you look at it like unit by unit, like they have the same sort of questions on defense, but they have fewer questions on offense, which is why I had the Wolfpack winning this game.
I totally think they can. I'm just going off a schedule. Like I'm not going to be shocked. Like that's a clear toss up. I'm probably hedging anyways because I don't want to pick a team to, like go undefeated or lose just one game. It's really hard to do it. So, but talent wise, like Boise can win this because George Trelawney offensive line. But it's going to come back to the defense for Boise to slow down Dubs and everything else. That's what it's going to take to win this game. And we'll see if they can do it. So they get Air Force. We haven't talked about them yet. So we can.
Wait, what about BYU? Here.
Oh, my bad. I thought I scrolled over them. Man, it's BYU. No kidding. We talked about last week.
Yeah, that's true.
just for BYU, it's still who's the quarterback? We don't know, but spoiler, it's going to be Romney. It's not going to be Jaren Hall. Come on. It's going to be him throwing the ball to – they lose like Dax Milne, really good receiver, draft the NFL. They also have a couple offensive linemen, one in the NFL. Brady Christensen, I believe, was picked up by somebody. But the big thing about this game is it's rivalry game, obviously. They don't like each other. They play like two decades in a row or something, that huge contract they signed. Boise's more settled at the positions that matter because the strengths on offense are almost the same. Running back will be strength for most teams. Quarterback, I give the edge to Boise, even though technically right now, this is my air quotes, they're deciding who the starting quarterback will be. Receiving group a touch better for Boise State. But even though it's on the road, I still think I'm taking Broncos because I don't think BYU's defense is going to be able to withstand everything. And last year, I'm not saying last year's a fluke at all, but they benefited from circumstances to play a schedule. Wasn't what they wanted to, and they took full advantage of and crushed everybody.
Yeah, I'm on record as not being a Cougars believer this year, so yeah. I got Boise State winning that one.
Yeah, I did too. I think it'd be fairly close. And last year's game was an anomaly because BYU was already still winning pretty handily. They just exploded late in that game with the 10th string quarterback for Boise State. And just it hurt them. It, whatever, had they had Bachmar, I don't think they still would have won, but it wouldn't have been a huge blowout. So I remember getting flack on that for Twitter last year. Like, well, if Bachmar played, I bet it'd be a little closer. They wouldn't win. And people like Boise, BYU fans, like, what do you guys want from me? Come on. You want to see you win by more points if their starting quarterback played the whole game? That's ridiculous. All right. Then they got CSU, which no.
Well, no, you forgot Air Force now.
What am I doing? I am blind. I am.
So we just want to like jump into this back half of the schedule now?
Sure. Let's do that. We don't need to go.
Okay. Back half of the schedule. So we're talking about the last six games. So it's home against Air Force, at Colorado State. Yeah. At Fresno,
not a chance.
Home versus Wyoming, home versus New Mexico, at San Diego State, with that nightmarish Black Friday morning kickoff.
9 a.m. Pacific kick. That's a tough back half.
It's not an easy back half.
Because we know what Air Force does, and whatever I'm bringing you guys up again, our Twitter, Boise guys, our DMs. Yes, Air Force will be a tough game. Okay.
They allowed 49 points, but they also managed to score 30 against Boise State last year.
Yeah, I'm leaning a Boise win, but don't give me this. It's a dominant thing when you win so fairly close, I think, two 10-point games in the past, like, eight tries. Mm-hmm. So I'm picking Boise to win. I just think they'll be able to do it with Air Force, sort of new QB. But the only thing in Air Force, there's turn backs. It's kind of hard to tell who's really come back and start and play that well. So that's an iffy game. I'm leaning Boise. Obviously, CSU, they can beat them because, no, it never happens when they're playing the Rams. They just crush them. Has the Rams even beat them yet in the Mountain West? I don't think so, right?
No, not that I can recall.
Because you know it's future Big 12 Colorado State Rams, I've been told on Twitter.
And I'm sure there's a lot of Boise State Broncos fans kind of nodding in their headphones right now and smiling serenely.
Hey, there you go.
Like, yes.
I got the jerks for you guys. Fresno State and Wyoming, we know that, well, all these are good. So let's stick a touch longer in Fresno State. This is, you know, I said Oklahoma State might be the most, well, I'm trying to rephrase this the best way because it's going to make some Boise State fans mad. But I'm going to say outside of the Nevada game, it's home game. This will be on par with the difficult levelness of playing UCF in the opener. Because I think Fresno is that good on offense.
Yeah.
Yes, he totally disagrees with me. The Jake Haener, Ronnie Rivers, receivers they have. Its offense might be second to only Nevada. And, UCF is up there, but top three at worst. But those top three, UCF, Nevada, and Fresno might all be like top 25 offenses or higher.
Yeah, I think the difference between, you know, those teams you just mentioned and Fresno, at least right now on paper, which we'll talk more about it when we get to the Bulldogs later in the summer. One, can they protect Jake Haener? Because that was an issue for very long stretches mm-hmm. last year, despite their offensive explosiveness. And two, can the defense figure out ways to bend slightly less often?
Because
they were disruptive. They made their fair share of kind of turnover worthy plays. They got their sacks and tackles for loss, but they also gave up a lot of big plays as well. And so how are they going to figure out how to remedy that at least a little bit?
No, those are all valid concerns about how to fix that against this Fresno State team.
And that's why I have Boise State winning on the road at Fresno.
What? You do?
Yeah.
You don't trust your team?
I mean, I think given Boise State's depth up front, given their potential to rush the passer, you know, I think for as good as Fresno State could be on offense on paper, like if there's one potential Achilles heel, it's Jake Haener running for his life like he was for a number of his games in the second half of last year. And so I think, that is the kind of thing where a good defensive front can disrupt a strong offense. And I think that Fresno is maybe more liable to stall out because of that than a team like UCF or a team like Nevada. And I think that's the difference between them.
I am going to say this in the most snarkiest way of why Fresno State is going to win.
Okay.
Boise State's going to lose to a team that lost to New Mexico the year before.
Okay, then.
Fresno State for the win.
That team was COVID depleted, by the way. Let's not forget that.
New Mexico with fifth string quarterback?
No, Fresno State.
So it's New Mexico.
Like a number of dudes.
I know. Hey, leave the important parts out. I want the end result. Rivers, they tried to force him in there, that touchdown record. He clearly was not ready to play.
Anyway, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that.
That's fine. We can bring up both. All right. Then they host Wyoming, which is going to be the best team the Mountain Division they face because the Mountain Division's not very good this year, in my opinion, outside of Boise and Wyoming. We know who Wyoming quarterback is. It's going to be going back to Sean Chambers. And it's, again, wait till we see what happens because we know the defense will be good. Like what Craig Bull wants to do. There's going to be plenty of talent out there. Plus a couple guys are returning on both sides of the ball, but it's going to be the offense. Cause with the new OC coming in from Wisconsin, if he's going to actually promise and deliver throwing the ball and do it well, this could be a team or I think it'd be close regardless of Wyoming does what they normally do with Xavier and Valade running a ton and barely passing. They could still hang around Boise State, but if the passing game opens up and their guys actually catch the ball, like you should on other wide receivers and have a good offensive scheme, throwing in the ball in the air, the mix in with that amazing ground game, I'll give Wyoming a pretty good, even a better chance. But I still don't think it's going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the games over the last couple of years, and for reasons, sometimes outside of their control, Wyoming's found themselves in this game against Boise State with sort of like one hand tied behind their back. Two years ago, they were, playing on the road, on the blue with Tyler Vanderwall, giving it to Xavier Valade basically 40 times and hoping to win them the game. And they almost won that game. Let's not forget. And last year it was it was sort of an ugly 17-9 game, but like that was also a one score game. And so, they've had their chances to knock off the Broncos in years past. And I really don't see on paper why it won't be more of the same. Like, this has been, since Wyoming broke through in 2016, it's still been, all Boise for the last 4 years, but it's been a lot closer the last couple of years. And so I think I can see another one score game on the horizon, but I think I would still take Boise to hold serve at home against the Cowboys in this one.
Yeah, I think mostly for me, just because I don't know what the offense is going to look like.
But I think if they lose at home to Nevada, then they absolutely have to beat Wyoming at home in November
to win the division.
Yes.
Okay, it's fair. All right, New Mexico win, right?
Yes.
Okay, we'll see how that goes. Quarterbacks official year one kind of for Danny Gonzalez after last year's kind of the road bows, as you like to call them. That was that was tough. We'll get to them later, but clearly they're not going to be there yet to beat Boise State. So we'll get to our Lobos previews later to discuss them more in depth. So at San Diego State, you mentioned it's on Fox. It's 9 a.m. Pacific up in, remember, Carson, not San Diego quite yet. Still up near L.A.
Yes.
Do you care it's that early? Like, do you have any concern or does it matter? It's like, oh, cool, I could watch a game I want to watch.
I mean, 9 a.m. I think about a Black Friday day game.
Yeah.
And I think about 2013.
Oh. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, and I think about how terrible things can happen to good teams.
Flashback.
With such an early kickoff, especially, which is not to say that Boise State is doomed. I'm just saying.
Wait. You're not referring to San Diego State being doomed? Come on. Don't disrespect the Aztecs.
I'm not. I didn't mean to. I apologize.
I'm kidding. I know we're talking about Boise all the time. I got to bring those cracks in there when they're open.
I'm just saying, like, if you're a Broncos fan, on paper, this seems like a game that the Broncos should win comfortably, if not necessarily as a blowout.
Oh,
given the circumstances, beware. That's all I'm saying.
As for the game itself, what comes to me for what we saw last year for Aztecs, it's always the same thing. If the running game goes well and the quarterback plays adequate, they can beat anybody in the conference. However, running back play questionable with Greg Bell at the moment, as we're sitting here in June. Quarterback plays, we talked about in the we discussed this game before as well. We don't know who the quarterback is, and they all played like garbage in the spring game. So I'm going Boise State because of what we know at the moment, but it's also week 13 or whatever. Black Friday was 6 months away from that game.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. and I'm sure that Broncos fans are aware that 4 of the last 5 games have been decided by 9 or fewer points.
I also remember the time I called a special teams play that will decide the game, and it did.
That's true. Yeah, that was a couple of years ago, right?
Exactly.
That was the last time they played, actually, in 2018. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this, I think this will be, I'm leaning Boise, but I think this should be a good game. I'm hoping that Greg Bell, back to fully health, if they have Lucas Johnson quarterback, and that Nevada has super small sample size, but there's potential there if they get him out there with Greg Bell at full strength. Yeah. If that's the case, I can totally see Boise State not winning this game. But we're not talking here the week before the game. We're talking months before the game. And the info we have is going to be quite different for every team. But Aztecs, we'll know who the quarterback is. We'll see how the running game's going, and we'll see what's on the line that weekend.
So what's your final record projection?
10-2.
And what is it in conference?
Oh, conference, 7-1.
So I've got the 9-3 and 7-1.
What was your – oh, that's right, you had Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Yeah, waffling on a bit because I could, your points are pretty good in there. I could see looking at where the bottom could be, they could easily lose to Oklahoma State. They could, again, lose to Nevada. They could lose to Wyoming. So there's – and even San Diego State, there's a pretty big swath of what they could be. I don't see them going like 7-5 or 6-6 by any stretch. But there's enough games on the schedule where I could say, I could see that being the loss. I think there's enough of those like toss-up kind of games a little bit here. Because when you look at like Bill Seifer's SP Plus and everything, he has only 3 toss-up, which I think is kind of low in my opinion. Boy, I don't know why BYU is a toss-up. That makes no sense. I'd rather have – because they have Fresno State like as a likely 70% win, Matt. 70%. Too high. Even Nevada's 77%. So, but even look at that, you make your own assumptions. His numbers are what they are, and they're really good. But I do think there's potential for more. I feel there's more closer games than what Bill Connolly is predicting for Boise State.
Yeah, and conversely, I will say that going undefeated is hard. But I will say that going undefeated is not off the table for this year's Broncos team. Like this, there's a universe out there where they do beat UCF and Oklahoma State and Nevada, and they're playing in on a New Year's Day 6 game on January 1st. I just think that there is enough demanding games that it's really hard for me not to see them tripping up at least once with one of those games.
Especially that last half of the schedule. You know what I mean?
I think the front part of the schedule is
I'd say there's more games in the back half that are difficult, but the front end is more difficult games, if that makes sense.
It does.
So what do you think? Because I like Nevada. I think Nevada can beat anybody on the schedule. I didn't predict that. Who do you think has the, like, those two? It sounds like you're sounding like Boise State when I'm talking about Nevada, where they could go undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at the two, I know we both predict losses there, but if you're going to put, like, I'm going to put them one or two to finish undefeated, who would you put at the top more likely?
I think if I'm looking at their schedules next to each other, I would probably put Nevada on number one.
Same here. I have Nevada as well.
Because if you gave me at Cal and at Kansas State, I would probably take that over at UCF and home versus Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'd say that's the easier slate right there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd add about Boise State?
No, I think we're good.
All right. So we'll be back sometime next week at MWR.com. Check out the website. Podcast, Mount Swire, iTunes, Spotify, Pocket Cast, wherever you get your podcast, because they're free to download. So you're welcome, because we're awesome like that, free podcast. But we'll put up a Twitter poll at MWC Wire on Twitter to vote. We're down to 8 teams now, so the Twitter poll will be 2. And we're going to do 2 this time, I guess. So how do you want to do it?
We'll take the top 2 from each one.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, that makes sense. So top 2. So more chance to get teams in there. We'll vote this week. So check that out to decide who we're going to talk about next. And we get to cram the night before to decide
how we're going to talk about.
I'm just saying, extra, the last minute cram. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's always the last second. Oh, what's this name? Underline this, circle that formula. Just saying. But we'll be back next time talking about another team. And we are almost halfway through this, which crazy to think about, but we're here four teams in, 8 to go. Yeah, just check out next time, MWR, and we'll see you then, folks.